have control. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you the podcast for empathy and imagination.
Yes, welcome. In studio tonight, we have me, Aubrey. We have Drew, and we have a special guest tonight, Mr. Tom Adams.
Yes. Tom Adams on the mic.
Sunny Tuesday afternoon.
Here we are, also again in my back patio in the garden. Sun's out, it's pretty nice.
Birds chirping.
Thanks for being here. We were just listening to a song I made on my phone.
Do you have a name for that song?
It's called Somber Piano Trap. So, Tom, would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Tom. And I am a journeyer. I am a seeker. And a explorer of possibilities.
Tom, what do you specialize in?
I specialize in seeking out means of expression of a greater, I guess meaning through art and visuals.
What are your mediums?
I do draw and explore a lot of ideas in pencil. I do painting on occasion with acrylics and watercolor gouache.
Did you go to school for art?
I went to school for art.
Cool.
Where'd you attend?
I went to Chicago.
What school in Chicago?
It was the Illinois Institute of Art. Chicago.
I.
The A.
IIA.
It was actually the ILIA.
ILIA.
ILIA, as it were. Not really.
How long were you there?
I was there for 4 years. I was in Chicago for 4 years. I went to school for like 3 1/4 years.
Is that where you met Matt?
That's where I met Matt. Yeah, my buddy Matt.
Cool.
It was just like bound to happen that I would run into the dude and encounter him in a lot of ways. He was in like I first met him, like I had seen him around school, and then I got a job at UPS loading trucks. Cool. And he worked in the same fucking wing as me, the same little like group of 8 docs.
Sounds like the dynamic duo. Like you guys probably.
We ended up graduating at the same exact class and everything. Like wow. his booth at the fucking show for our graduation, the graduation show or whatever. It has a better name. That's not coming to me.
The final project.
Yeah, where we all show off our goods, like our fucking demo reel and shit, and potential employers come. Yeah, so we were like in it together, and shared a lot of the same kind of ideals and appreciations.
And you guys live together now.
We do. This is the second time we've lived together.
Wow.
There was two different places in Chicago where we lived together. I had this this garden apartment. It was like a block and a half from where he lived. That I got after I moved out of the high rise that was like school sponsored housing.
I've heard people say that the two of you look like brothers.
Yeah, we kind of do. It's weird, man. It's weird.
Well, maybe we should describe how Tom looks. Tom's 6'5"?
Bright green, 6'5", red mohawk.
I have appendages.
6'4", is that right? 6'5"?
Yeah, something like that.
Tom is a very tall, very trim gentleman. Long reach. And he also works with us. at our job, Cafe Gratitude.
That's right.
I have a fellow warrior
on the mesa.
I have some fierce appendages, I should say.
You have, of course you have. And they're needed.
Hmm. They come in handy. I don't know if it's needed.
Well,
it's kind of a luxury, and it's a bonus where there are otherwise, you know, like subtractions, I guess.
In the previous episode, we talked about that he and I both work at Cafe Gratitude and our roles there, just for continuity.
I never heard you guys actually mention the name of the restaurant.
I think we mentioned it once.
I don't think you did.
We'll have to check.
We both work at
Cafe
Gratitude.
Really, I don't think you did.
So what's your role at Cafe Gratitude, Tom?
I am currently a bartender.
And this is wine and spirits only?
This is...
Or beer and wine only?
This is... No, it's mostly actually like weird smoothies and stuff.
Mm. But there is wine and beer.
There's wine
and
beer.
In limited selections.
Wine and beer is probably... one of the lesser pieces of the pie.
It's probably like 5%, you'd say? 10%?
No, I would say more about 15 or 20.
15 or 20.
But
what's,
no
what's
spirits.
The lion's share?
Well, spirits, there's spirits getting dealt around, flying all around.
I was going to say, no spirits except for the...
Yeah. No, there are many spirits.
Our hippie ancestors.
So what is your experience of Cafe Gratitude?
My experience of it is that it's a wonderful place with a lot of great approaches to how to conduct commerce and really have a sensibility about the quality and, you know, total value of like all of the sentient beings involved in the process.
Do you feel that you're seen there? Do you have that experience that you could listen to?
Yes, I do. I don't necessarily know that I always voice exactly what it is my ideals.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know,
do
ideas.
You feel like you could share them if you needed to?
I do. I really feel like it's open to that, but I feel like I don't necessarily need to inject myself into the, or my own, you know, perspectives into the experience of the people that come in there, because I think they're trying to experience something that is more akin to what the original designers of the restaurant had in mind. I'm Tom.
You're
a special
Tom.
Guest.
Tom, tell us about yourself.
I'm a dude. I'm a dude from the Midwest.
What part?
Michigan.
So you
it's
were from
land
Michigan.
Of, and land of freedom and
raised,
cars. And
you were raised in Michigan.
I was raised in suburbia, Metro Detroit.
Were you in what you would consider a safe neighborhood? Not
yes.
safe neighborhood?
No, yeah. It was safe.
Safe neighborhood.
Safe neighborhood.
Cool.
I would play, I would ride my bike all over the place and fucking explore and never felt threatened by anything.
The standard kind of suburb setup.
Yeah.
What yeah. prompted you to move to California?
Well, California has always been a prospect for me in some ways. It's been fleeting, or, you know, it felt like it wasn't going to happen at times.
It was like, you always wanted to go? Why?
No, there was a draw here because of the entertainment industry, I guess.
Hmm.
Entertainment.
You wanted to do your art?
I wanted to do art. I wanted to be involved in like video games or like special effects, cartoon. Not cartoon, really, but...
like you do animation.
I do animation, yeah.
Yeah, we just had some breaking news. Air.
Checking it out. I'm not sure.
By the time this podcast is edited,
it's time to move to Mexico.
It's not going
to
be so.
They might want to build a wall themselves
to protect them.
To protect them from all the stoners moving in from the southwest and
landmark case in Mexico.
Southernly
Supreme
ports.
Court could have the way could pave the way for marijuana legalization. Wednesday, Mexico's Supreme Court will debate whether the prohibition of the consumption and cultivation of marijuana for the personal use is unconstitutional.
Hmm.
Unconstitutional, which means they amended their constitution with a human rights amendment that said the right to
grow your own medical, and smoke.
Right. Is a human right.
That's a human right. Just to grow and smoke.
Life, pretty liberty, badass. And the pursuit of happiness.
Dude, that's a direction that I enjoy.
Pretty ballsy move.
Yeah. Okay,
that
Mexico.
Reminds me of that, you know, Ecuador has that Bill of Rights for the Earth.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. Yeah. We should put a link there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll link to that on the website. So, yeah, you grew up in Michigan, suburbs of Michigan.
Suburbs. I grew up on 19 Mile. Everybody's like familiar with the miles in Detroit. Oh, you're by 8 Mile, dude.
What is I don't know what that. I'm not familiar with that.
I was at 19 Mile. 8 Mile is like the movie that Eminem did.
Right.
Right.
Cuz he's from there.
What are those neighborhoods? What
is 8 Mile is streets? Actually the dividing road between Warren County and Macomb County.
Okay.
And Macomb County is where I grew up.
Okay. What is the county divide?
Warren County is basically Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Close to the, like, north of 8 Mile, you find it's, like, predominantly white, and it's almost, like, white trashy-ish right by 8 Mile.
Mm-hmm.
Like redneck?
Like 8.5 mile, 9
like,
mile.
Like, poor white people, mostly, living in trailers and whatnot?
Trailer parks or, like, you know...
Small houses.
Hmm.
When does it start to get wealthy? How far?
I really experienced it like right before I left Michigan for Arizona. I was meter reading for Macomb County, right?
Hmm.
So I went all over in that area.
Meter reading,
electric meters. Before they switched over to this like smart meters, I'm sure they're at smart meters by now.
You weren't just showing up at meetings and kind of reading what was happening.
No, okay. I was meter reading,
right.
Not meeting, meeting reading, or meeting. Yeah. I was not a meeting reader.
I get those two occupations.
Also, folks, I wanted to share with you that I feeling in need to take my medicine. A doctor has prescribed this medicine for me. It's called cannabis, and I have a device. Yep. It has like a glass thing, and then there's some flame, and you breathe in the essence and.
I myself have not had a doctor's prescription for this medication, so
I want to get that.
Therefore, I will not be taking part in it at all.
Tom is winking. For those of you who are listening,
I am not a criminal. Damn it!
I am talking.
I'm not a fucking criminal.
I am not an animal.
So you had all those experiences.
I have had many experiences.
And then you moved to Arizona. And then Arizona, what did you do?
What did I do? What do you mean, what did I do?
Why'd you go there? Where'd you land? What's the first thing?
I landed with my buddy Ryan because it was fucking a great prospect compared.
It was better than where you were.
Yeah.
What was wrong?
What needs
of yours were not being met in Detroit?
Good question.
The need for... exploration and adventure and also new gardens to plant seeds in.
I felt
like I did not have fertile ground in Michigan for like really kind of tackling maybe not tackling, just taking on like my sense of greater possibilities.
Does that I'm hearing metaphors for women also
in a sense, maybe. You know, I think on a fundamental level it was just a desire for change.
Restlessness.
I was working. I was doing this job. It was winter. It was the winter time.
Not that other winter. You mean winter time?
It was winter time.
Yeah.
Winter place is different.
Winter time. Very, very winter place.
Right. Winter who?
There was snow. There was snow on the ground for like the entire like 3 months. Between December, January, February. there was snow on the ground until my last day of work. Yeah, is when it fucking melted, and there was so much dog shit.
Oh my god, in the snow?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I was actually thinking about this job earlier today, in light of that it might be brought up in conversation with you guys in this format.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about how, like, that job was like a crazy fucking adventure, man. Every house is like a scenario kind of thing. It's like hunt down the fucking electrical meter, read the fucking numbers on it, which
they're
are
not always
dials.
In the same place. Sometimes they're hidden.
So yeah, you got to hunt down these little fucking boxes on each house, right? And there's little instructions on your handheld pad that take you through the route and stuff. So it's almost like it's like an Easter egg hunt, or like a fucking adventure. And each house has its own like the monsters. It's like a fucking role playing game, Dungeons and Dragons, but it's real life.
They're
the
like
monsters
dogs.
Are fucking dogs.
Yeah.
The monsters are dogs or like mean people, like assholes here and there, but it's mostly dogs.
You know what? What if they did turn it into a video game where you play a video game where you control a drone that has these itineraries, and you actually use the drone or some kind of remotely controlled robotic thing to check these meters.
That'd be so
but
much
just,
easier.
But it's
if you
within
were
the
drone.
Context of playing a game.
You can totally do that.
Yeah,
it's nice to not Good have points. Flesh when you're exploring these these fucking crazy dog zones.
Were you bitten?
No, never.
Huh?
Yeah,
I was bitten.
I know. I heard about that actually.
You know, it's funny. The first episode we were talking about, we both had like these warrior accidents happen.
Yeah,
Aubrey and I like the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He crashed his bike and was injured.
He told me about the bike. He showed me like the bruise at work.
I have a
and
picture.
I told him
maybe I should post that.
That day that he told me about that, some dude fucking almost hit me like going on a red when he had green when people were crossing the crosswalk. He just fucking just totally cut in front of a whole shitload of people who had to like stop so he could go through. And I was like the first one on a bike.
Yeah.
I started going and he just turns right in front of me. And I just fucking stopped, slowed down. I was going like, 0.05 miles an hour.
Hmm.
You know, like close to like the standstill where you just like have to put your foot down or whatever. Like I never got there, but seriously, like that guy, like I had to react to him,
It's close to home, yeah. Because the biggest threat, the biggest hazard when you're riding your bike is not potholes and all that other stuff.
No.
It's cars,
drivers. It's drivers, not cars. Like it's gun. It's people that kill people, not guns or whatever. Like it's
guns
it's drivers, not cars.
Right.
Drivers,
it's not the actual car. It's the driver.
It's
of
the
car.
Driver of the vehicle.
Yeah, and that's why I'm for automated driving for sure.
Hmm. Interesting.
And,
let's talk about that.
I'd love to. And I
I'm
also
not.
To bring
I'm
up
not
that
for that.
Aubrey and I just went camping again on our bikes. The Bike Order Warriors had a cool trip. Going out to Angel Island, and
where is Angel Island for our international
for those,
listeners?
For those who are just learning about Angel Island, it's like in the center of the San Francisco Bay, and we got there by way of two ferries each way.
It's closer to Marin County, like the Northwest Peninsula kind of thing.
Hold on, pause.
For you,
what is this? iTunes?
Yeah,
yeah. Why do I have to open up a music library management application in order to change the settings on my phone?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't there be like a phone app? iPhone app, right? Bundling iTunes with the management of the whole iPhone thing, that's like, that tells you where they want you to be.
Mm.
You want to be in, they want you to be in their gated community of apps, services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. But we were just talking about Windows 10.
Ooh.
And I really like, some of you folks are learning right now that Aubrey is like an IT person. And from my perspective, it's so dazzling what he does. It's like magic to me. So I'm pretty curious. Aubrey, can you describe what is like Windows 10, what is that? Why is it a problem in your view, and is that your view?
Well, so I had some clients ask me, should I upgrade to Windows 10? It's prompting me to upgrade. and it's a free upgrade. And my response was, my recommendation is to not upgrade at this time, because Microsoft has a history of releasing the operating systems early in order to get to, in order to snag early adopters, when in fact the operating system is not ready for prime time. A lot of there's a lot of compatibility issues with older applications you might already have installed, and or audio interfaces, for example. There might be new drivers, right? But not for Windows 10.
Why'd they do that? Why did Windows do that?
That's
with
what
Windows 10?
What struck me about
Microsoft is very aggressive in marketing their operating system. That's always been their main product.
Okay.
That was the masterstroke of Bill Gates, was licensing an operating system, a disk operating system, aka DOS. DOS.
Huh.
So that was his genius move, was for every computer you produce, we'll license you DOS. So,
and like $7 billion later, you know, we have everybody either choosing between him or his buddy.
Yeah, but Bill Gates is actually pretty cool.
His old
buddy. He seems like a pretty aware guy. You know,
I agree.
He seems like an aware individual. The Bill Gates Foundation, right? His philanthropist organization that he founded has like the record every year for how much money it gives and raises for certain causes.
That's something to be said about that.
It's like he's a guy who can cure cancer. He's throwing money at problems, like, it might happen.
It's true. That's pretty cool.
Folks, the cancer cure is already out there.
What is it? What are the top three things?
The top three cures for cancer. Here we go.
Fasting. Fasting's a good one.
Fasting. Number two.
Balancing the alkaline and acidity, the pH balance of the body, and getting it away from acidosis, which is the primary operating system.
What are the main tools for somebody to control that of their body?
Fruit is a very alkalizing thing. Lemon juice, alkalizing water. Or alkaline water.
So, like, ingesting these things will help to do that.
I'm not a doctor,
but that's what's supposed. I'm not making you promise,
doctor.
You're not.
I've also seen a documentary. Maybe some potential listeners have heard about it. It's called A Beautiful Truth. It's about a doctor who cured cancer in the early, maybe like the 1940s, 1950s, by having people take on vegetarian diets and doing coffee enemas, not hot coffee enemas.
Did you say number three? Yeah, what was number three? Did you say number three? Of the top three,
I would say number three. Number two is acidosis, right?
Right.
Number three is probably... Number three was correcting the body pH levels.
So what was number two again?
That was number two. Did you say number three? Number two was that. Number two is the correcting the body pH levels, a.k.a.
Number three is...
reversing acidosis.
What is
number
acidosis?
Three is not remembering number two.
Number three is saying something else is number three that was actually number two.
Okay. Cultivate Alzheimer's. That's a cure for cancer.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Number three, I would say, is probably overturning or reducing, minimizing, and even reversing what you would call stress. Mm-hmm. Mental stress. I think that the
Reverse stress? I'm interested.
I don't know that you can, but somehow in the face of maybe
I have a thought crises, on stress. I remember a few years ago I saw this documentary. It was called Stress: Portrait of a Killer. It was like a BBC thing. It was really good. It really changed my perspective. It actually caused me to eventually
stress out,
eject a band member that we were recording with at the time.
Huh.
That documentary was the main catalyst for Evan and I to no longer request the services of Chorism.
Because you realized he was a stressful element who was contributing to a toxic atmosphere.
And toxic to my body.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's just, I've had enough. Yeah. Mm. And so we released
it. That's what I'm getting at. I think number three is important because it just kind of harkens to how much of an effect our attitudes and perception, attitudes about what we perceive can influence our total, like the mind just has such control over the body via like the endocrine glands and all that kind of stuff as far as releasing things that make you feel like you're, you know, in tense situations where it really might otherwise not exist.
That's a good point.
So you're almost creating a very stress, like fear-laden reality for yourself, whereas one would not otherwise not exist. And I think that, you know, science has fucking backed this up immensely.
Or
you couldn't hear me before?
Stress is a detriment to the body.
Yeah.
Well, then I saw this documentary. The second documentary was a TED Talk, and it was about a new way to look at stress in the body. And it's true that the way we
oh boy, have seen, TED Talk.
I know. Here it comes. Put the link in. I forget it now. Anyway,
there was a TED
basically
Talk
it was describing how to new way to look at stress, and that way is to when you feel stress, instead of what I had originally learned, which was to kind of worry that it was harming my body because stress was like building like a negative physical effect, and I was always worried, oh, am I going to have like an early heart attack or some shit? So then what she was advocating
for...
Male
pattern baldness.
Or male pattern baldness.
Sometimes that's a result of stress.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it accelerates.
But she said, look at it this different way. She said, look at it like it's your body getting ready to do something important. Mm. Like it's if you feel that anxiety, if you feel that stress, it's like that's for you to use. That is now like cheap, dirty energy, but you got it. And it's ready to go.
It's like extra surplus energy that your body's
stress,
producing.
Like stress it's like stimuli.
It's like, all right, let's up our game. Let's do this.
Because it really is for you to put into what to do something. And when you do...
That's cool.
That's the way to look at it.
That's an empathic way of looking at the onset of stress.
Yeah. And so that really changed my perspective on stress.
I like that. And that's going to stress me out for days, but I like it.
Well, then you're going to feel great.
Exactly. I'll be
You're going to accomplish things.
Next podcast, I'll be...
All right. Topics.
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 Well, I want to bring it back to the automated cars. We mentioned that earlier.
Oh,
I don't like it.
What don't you like about it, Tom?
Tom doesn't like it. Tom, why don't you like it?
I don't like it because, like, you look at these street applications like Google Maps and stuff like that make you, like, make all these weird, crazy fucking wrong turns. I don't really trust artificial intelligence being in play when it comes to heavy moving objects, I guess, is the foundational line behind my objection. I don't think that we... Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. People seem to agree with us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Can you repeat the question?
What do you see as the main hazards of self-automating cars?
I think...
that's not the same question.
That's not the same question. Oh, no. What do we think about automated cars? No, I'm going to go. I think automated cars...
I'm only going to get more specific if you ask me to repeat the question.
I think automated cars are the clear future. I think the fear of automated heavy things doing their own thing is happening everywhere constantly, like in warehouses and in, you know, places where things are made. You have huge machinery moving quickly under its own automative power in really excellent harmony all the time. And if you could take that energy and put it into people moving, because it's already fucking awesome. In before the Great Dust Bowl, like 80% of jobs was farming.
Mm-hmm.
2% of jobs is farming now. The Great Depression. 2% of labor now is farming, and that's from automation. All of that energy that people used to do is now done by machines. And it's incredible calories considering what it used to take that the machines now save because they use cheap energy. So there's a tremendous gain there. That's only natural that that would be a thing that people would try out. And so automating driving is amazing because so many teenagers die every year. I think it's about 10,000.
Right.
And what it's my view that more teenagers will die as a result of automated driving.
I don't know.
Because the cars will go crazy?
Because every car will be like Christine?
Because of the chaotic element of the road system, I think in a lot of ways, I don't necessarily know that it can be properly mapped out every little like situation. I think what you need is a sentient being behind the wheel to be able to problem solve certain situations.
I would agree, but I would also point out, what are the main causes of car accidents? Probably being under the influence of alcohol to an excessive amount, so that you lose, motor skills, crash, and texting while driving. Right, both of these things you could do in an automated car. You could just sit in the back, drink beers, or just be drunk, texting. Both really good ideas. Be really drunk and texting at the same time. It's an awesome idea.
Yeah. Always good.
I the guy that hit
but,
me,
but
might
those
have
two
been
problems
both.
Would be solved by automated cars. There'd be way fewer deaths because of those causes.
Tom, there'd be so fewer deaths with automated cars annually. Like, we'd drop off about 10,000 less.
I think what we would need in order to have that be able to be implemented in the proper way would be a total reconstruction of infrastructure.
You think it couldn't be done on the current highway?
Like, let's
if we're
going
to build
an automated car going down
else.
The one in like the Muir Woods, you know, on the way, like the drive that I took, like winding through fucking crazy turns and shit. Or what about? I was just thinking about this scenario, like people on bikes. Like, let's say you're in an automated
bikes?
Car.
Bikes? Did you say bikes?
People on bikes. You're in a car. You're at a stop sign or a red light and you are turning right and a car or a person on a bicycle is coming in, on the street you're trying to turn onto and going past you, and your automated car does not recognize that there's a guy on a bike 15 feet away. You know,
there's all sensors, Tom. Yeah. They're covered in sensors, man.
Covered in sensors?
They're covered. It's never happened. They went across the country. They've gone 200,000 miles. The only accident they were in was a driver crashing into them from the back.
Fender bender.
It crashed nothing. Bikes and all, stoplights across the whole country.
You know, Google is pioneering this effort, and
Google Maps.
They are as like me and my brother were trying to get to fucking Oakland, the Oakland A's stadium, and Google Maps had us turn into some fucking cul-de-sac under a freeway entrance, under a freeway ramp. It was just fucking retarded.
Yeah,
it
fucking sucks. Our technology sucks still.
It's like it's such a big fucking world, man. It's a huge world. There's a. I think there's a lot to map out. So I would imagine that if AI cars came about until we have some kind of crazy fucking technology.
Yeah, where's mine at?
I think it's inside.
My where's fucking, your crazy technology?
Where's my teddy bear? Is
I think
what
it's
I was
inside
thinking.
Your head, man.
My teddy bear.
If we're gonna rebuild infrastructure, dude, maglev. Aubrey.
Maglev.
That's what I hope. I'm really big into this guy Bernie Sanders.
Oh yeah, that's a topic.
He's introducing a bill. There's nothing in there, man.
Yeah, that's what we're talking. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think mine is on the coffee table.
All right, Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom,
what's up with Bernie?
He has a bill going through, going on to an earlier topic.
Do you like Bernie? What's going on?
I actually almost love Bernie.
Okay.
Almost. It's like right there. I love him in the same way that I love, like, Jon Stewart. Or,
So you wouldn't say it's adoration?
I would say it's adoration and total, like, I got this dude's back. I think that he is...
You're on
like,
board with
Bernie. In his venue,
hey, Tom,
yeah.
Would you get in the microphone a little closer?
You want me to mic it up a little closer?
Yeah.
We're gonna... There's a crackling coming on.
But when I get close to crackling...
Ready?
No,
stop.
But I want to hear your voice.
Enjoyment.
Rolling.
Yeah, fun.
Welcome back to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. I am Drew, here with...
Aubrey.
And...
Special guest,
Dr. Tom Adams.
Nice.
Fresh off the Mayflower.
Mm. Ready to persecute some engines.
Yep. There we go. I went to the bathroom earlier, and...
Oh, dude.
Okay.
How'd that go?
Just a test. That was.
I do that all the time.
That was a test of my bowels. Thank you. They work. Couple topics.
Topics.
This one time I took a shit on this... Never mind. Do you have a topic?
New topics, Aubrey.
Topics. I wanted to bring in NVC. NVC, which stands for nonviolent communication.
Nautical vehicular.
Technically, shouldn't be an acronym because nonviolent is a hyphenated word. But we'll let that slide.
It's a term that the founder himself has said that he does not like.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Marshall Rosenberg on his audiobook says, by the way, that's not a name that I like.
Okay, I learned about NVC, nonviolent communication, from you, Drew.
Yeah, I'm really into it.
Where did you first...
That's where I heard of it, too.
Where did you first encounter it, Drew?
I guess I really first encountered it on my very first trip to Burning Man. I was with my previous partner...
What year was this?
I think it was 2012.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah, I pick on catch up quick on the thing that seems natural to me, I guess. So we're on our way there, and we were in the long line waiting. We're like, what do we want to do? And she was like, oh, been trying to get me to listen to it for months. She was like, oh, you'd really like this. And I was like, I don't need that. I already know that. Huh. Just by the title, I'm sure I understand it.
Right.
That's what I did. And she was like, seriously, I think Dick. You'll like this. I think you'll... I was.
Asshole.
I was like, I...
Just kidding.
She was like, I think that you'll really into it. I'm like, no, why would I need that? I'm already... offended.
And it's become such... I mean, it's something I associate with your character and your personality. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to me that you resisted it so much at first.
Isn't that funny? Because I thought I was a master. And she was like, you are. You're already really great. But there's this other level. And I was like... Okay, fine, I'll listen. Okay. And then I was like, oh, shit.
So NVC, from my understanding, there's a book, Nonviolent Communication, mm-hmm. written by a man named Marshall Rosenberg, right? And
That's correct.
We'll link to it on the site. And
Rosenberg?
Marshall Rosenberg. He's got a really cool voice. As well.
Saul Rosenberg?
I know Saul Rosenberg. I haven't read the book, but I did listen to the audiobook of it upon your recommendation. And I liked it.
Thank you.
And there's a lot there. So I'm interested right now In you talking maybe a little bit more about NVC, and you seem to have embraced it, and what that means in your life, and how you've embraced it.
Thanks for asking. Yeah, it's like NVC has definitely become a directive in how I communicate and how I listen. And it's very much changed the way that I think about like my internal dialogue to myself. Like, I remember before, years ago, having stories in my head like I wasn't good enough at this thing, or I would like my internal voice would say like negative stuff like, oh, you're harming them, or you're slowing whoever down, or whatever. And
thoughts that are self-defeating.
Yeah, and learning to notice when that was happening and really check if that's the most true.
Right.
And that was kind of the first part of a larger journey that led into NVC, where once I could kind of get that under my belt, I sort of learned a ways to listen so much better, and that just was because I wanted to. And I think NVC is for those who want to, and I really did want to, because I had some already kind of NVC style communication happening before that, that was closer, people would feel really comfortable with me and speak with me, and I'd have an empathic experience. People often say that I'm easy to talk to, and that seems to be true. And so I
as long as they don't say you're easy to shout at,
right?
Thanks, Mom and Dad. I'm just kidding.
That's good.
I love my mom and dad.
Yeah. So NVC is noticing the difference between needs and strategies and judgments. Just noticing when you're communicating which one of those it
just
is.
Just noticing.
Just noticing. Not making one wrong or the other. You're just noticing. Am I talking about a strategy, a judgment, or a need?
Yeah.
And NVC espouses that all humans share the same basic needs.
Right. Cue Maslow.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Yes.
Maslow and everyone before him and Rosenberg all have amazing lists.
Shakespeare knew the needs. He does not offer instruction, but he does offer observation of the most perfect pitch. Shakespeare. I was thinking about comedy. This is something. Have you guys heard of this? Comedy.
Comedy. I've not heard of that.
You guys heard of this thing?
Wait, no. It's a tragedy. It's a story of a tragedy, basically, right? Comedy.
No one via
circa its original definition.
Well, we have a visitor right now. Our neighbor Melinda, like, and the their great dog.
Was it Rome or was it Greece? Greece, Greco-Roman comedy.
Greco-Roman comedy.
Hmm.
That's right. I had this idea, and it was like more of a question, which can also be an idea. But it was a question of: is NVC compatible with comedy?
That's a good question,
because comedy a lot of times tries to push the boundaries. Tries to invert your expectations, right?
Stir the pot.
Subvert your expectations. You expect one thing, you get the other.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's vulgar, you know, vulgarity comes into it. Comedy.
I'm not sure comedy can be nonviolent. I was thinking about that. I was like, you know.
But then there's comedians like Brian Regan, where it's kind of G-rated, and it's
but he's very self-deprecating.
Okay.
I mean, nonviolence is not necessarily not self-deprecating.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not like that's not a law or something.
But you're saying that he's still being quote-unquote quote-unquote violent in his language.
I suppose if you were to want to describe
in reference to himself.
In reference to himself, right. Still in the terms of NVC.
That's interesting. So you think they're incompatible?
I do. I think it's incompatible.
That's fine. Yeah, that's great.
I think it's totally fine, because like my partner and I were talking, and I was like, she was like, "Oh, you're so funny," and I do. She laughs all the time, all day, every day. We're hanging out. She's laughing all the time because I'm just funny to her, and so that's great. And I was like, man, she just laughs all the time. It's like, maybe I should go on stage and it'd be funny and people would like it. But I won't talk shit about anybody. I just won't do
it. Not necessarily true that if you're funny
but
in your
everyday
life,
you don't have to
stage.
Talk shit about people to be funny.
I don't know all comics, though. A little bit. And it's funny.
Nah,
I don't
I don't
do
think,
that,
I don't
you
think,
can talk about yourself.
I think there's great
I talk
comics.
About my struggles.
There's great comics that
sure.
never talk shit on anybody.
Bill Hicks. No, it's David Cross. Bill Hicks. Bill Burr. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Cool. I know so all that. They're great.
I have to come up with a top
three. They are great.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Top three, go.
Bill Hicks. Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright is fucking awesome. He's the guy that Reiner. I don't know about. Who's the dude that died of a heroin overdose?
So one of them's R-rated, X-rated. One of them's PG, and one of them's G.
Mitch Hedberg?
How about that? Yeah.
They all have. It's all great, right?
Is it Mitch Hedberg?
He's. I like his.
He went out early.
I mean,
he's
you know.
Not producing because.
Drew, top three comedians.
Oh my gosh! It's like
right.
Think,
go now.
I think my
that's
my
that's
medication
called
is inhibiting the me finding the name of the person that I'm right. picturing
okay.
right now.
I want to say
that's an improv comedy thing that you don't.
I
want to
say
is put someone on the spot.
Hmm.
You know, I was gonna. I was
yeah,
gonna, I was gonna bring an improv.
You did that comedy. Earlier when you were like introduce yourself, and I was like, I'm who the fuck am I? What do I do? What do I say? Who am? Like, I'm never realizing myself within any moment.
That's why it, the best mode of improv comedy interaction is yes and. And I was
yes and.
Yes and. I love
my
yes.
my topic this week is comedy and yes improv comedy kind of as a subset. Yes, I love the idea of yes and.
I love yes and.
I love yes and. I love yes and.
Conversational tool as well.
Yes and.
Help me with his
Mitch
name.
Mitch Hedberg.
He's amazing. He's like,
me.
No, not you. It's okay. Not you.
All right.
Jeff Dunham.
Jeez, that narrows it down.
So he's in the 70s. He was an African American gentleman.
Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, number one.
Okay.
Thank
good,
you.
Good
I
call,
couldn't
man.
Think of his name. Damn
he's
it.
I got that name,
he's
dude.
He's that memorable.
I know that
oh
guy.
God. Richard Pryor, he's he was badass. So crazily good.
George Carlin.
Yeah. George Carlin. And it's like he wasn't even that funny, but it was, I loved watching him. And he was kind of funny. Like, he always said good shit, and then sometimes it was funny. He had cool poetry.
He was a smart guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was fun.
And he was also, again, just parenthetically, a great observer of yeah. humanity.
Hmm. And then there's,
so,
I guess it'd be
John
this last
Stewart.
Guy, just guy, Steve, God, fucking name, I have no idea.
Steve Carell?
No, it's a different guy. He's on Netflix now, and it's really amazing. Actually, we saw him. Coming down from candy flipping.
Other thing.
No, candy flipping is when you ingest lysergic acid diathiamide with MDMA.
Yes.
Okay. Topics.
Cool.
Shakespeare.
Pretty cool topic.
No, I don't know a lot about Shakespeare, so considering
down with Shakespeare.
That you have a
Tom,
guest.
Tom, we're going to go with Aubrey.
Shakespeare.
For a second.
Is like, you know, he's dude, that is Saint Germain. All right.
Saint Germain to the conversation.
That's Saint Germain in his 140th century of life. No, his 14th century of life. And he Saint Germain had experienced a lot of the drama and been involved in the arts. He ascended in his third lifetime and fucking just kept reincarnating into different forms.
Huh?
And
whoa.
Lived for like 400 years at a time each time. It's true. You can look it up on the internet.
We're gonna play. We're gonna play a song. And then we're gonna maybe talk if you want. Tom, talk about
I
what
like,
you see.
I like songs.
Cool.
Can I play a song?
Yeah, but
Thanks, everybody. Today's episode is brought to us by Final Corp. Finally, a corporation you can believe in. This corporation is great. They have only their best interests in mind. They're one of a kind. Final Corp. These guys have been producing 50 different flavors of mayonnaise.
Thank you, Final Corp.
For over 50 years.
Yeah. They have bourbon barrel-aged mayonnaise.
That's right.
They have a lemon mayonnaise.
Triple lemon mayonnaise. Yep.
Hold standby.
They have this. They just sent us this kind of introductory package, and check this out. They have mayonnaise based ice cream.
Hmm.
This shit, man. Oh. Sorry, this stuff is great.
Is it with the pockets of mayonnaise in it?
Pockets of mayonnaise. And I was trying it out today, and I was trying out their poison ivy flavored mayonnaise based ice cream. Delicious. But I wrote in, you know, I kind of have an allergy. I kind of have a reaction to poison ivy. You know what? They have two other flavors, poison oak and poison sumac.
Ooh.
I'm like a pig in shit here with this mayonnaise ice cream brought to us by Final Corp. Thanks so much, Final Corp, for endorsing the episode. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
I would like to say that I trust in Final Corp for all my final needs.
Finally, a corporation. Final Corp, it'll be fine.
Do you guys want to do another topic, or you want to hear some different music, or what do we want to do?
Well, I was kind of thinking about talking about "quote unquote" sacred geometry,
okay,
and how it fits in with comedy and NBC.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, sacred geometry with comedy and NBC. Well, Aubrey, could you give me a little more
about
that? Could you start us off?
Sacred
NBC.
Right.
Nonviolent communication, which I advocate.
V is in Victor.
NVC, yes.
My enunciation is kind of shitty.
Try to bring out the teeth.
Intense correlations, I believe, exist between
Aubrey, could you start us off with this topic?
Sure. I think sacred geometry might be something that actually exists in the sense that there are proportions that exist that we recognize in the same way that we recognize patterns. Humans have a great, one of the best
pattern recognition.
Ability to recognize patterns. And so understanding proportion is a pattern. So I think the idea of sacred geometry, the way that I would like to understand that concept is more in like a anthropomorphized geometry, where we see the proportions that exist in us exist in other places in nature, and that's what we resonate with, and that's what we respond to. Or that's what I respond to.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And it could be sacred in that you can make anything sacred, right? You can idealize the arch, for example.
Television?
Yeah.
I think that sacred geometry is really, when it's presented in its greatest capacity, is really represents a great symbolic structure to the very fabric of existence. It has an aesthetic to really align people with a certain understanding of like the mathematical principles and just incredible chaotic structural nature of like everything that is foundational to the structure of existence.
Thank you. Wow.
That's pretty cool. How do you know if the geometry is sacred? That was my question.
Because it's pretty. Okay?
That's what
I'm
saying.
Okay,
like,
with
dolphins
I'm
are
okay
pretty,
with
but
that.
Tuna aren't.
You know what, Tom?
Tuna,
I'm actually
don't eat dolphins.
I'm okay with that interpretation. Like, it's an aesthetic thing and it's subjective. That's how I know it's sacred. I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but to say
there's a personal sacredness, but I think when it comes to sacred geometry, there's universal impact that anyone that looks at it and understands the proportional relationships involved.
Keep going. I'm listening.
Keep going. Yeah. Keep going.
I'm on board, man.
It's a visual representation, almost like a lot of sacred geometry is presented to you visually, and it kind of shows. Yeah. It kind of shows you.
Would we say that the buckyball is sacred geometry? Almost, you know.
I think of Metatron's cube. Mm-hmm. Metatron's cube is pretty fucking intense shit.
What about a septograph? So. You know, fuck, man.
So what?
It's been quite a week, hasn't it? Ooh, turn it up, would you?
Let's try.
Ooh.
That's a little bit
that
of
sounds
nice. That's a little bit of Giant Electric
Check that
spider.
Out. Can we get a link there, please?
Get a link to Giant Electric Spider.
Giant Electric Spider.
You were involved in that project?
That's the name
of
it.
That's Aubrey's music. You're in that band right now.
I'm in that band. That's
right now.
Song we do. We
Dude,
do that.
That
we do
cool.
That song.
That sounds cool, man.
That's awesome.
I'll put a link up on
that
the site.
A great,
Thank
that
you.
Was a great song.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
You know, there's another song that Aubrey's on. That I was on too, actually.
solving crimes?
Well, that's one of them. I was thinking of a different one.
You had one queued up. I see.
World may have come and gone.
Oh yeah, put that on.
What's that?
You have that queued up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, put that on.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm down with putting that on.
Okay, here it goes.
That's what I meant.
Put it on.
I don't mean to be imperative.
Things out, and then you guys, if something speaks to you, just react.
Oh, cool. List of potential topics?
List of potential topics. Huh. Shout out something. If not, then no worries. Ready?
Ready.
Tom, ready?
Yes.
Aubrey, ready?
Ready.
Okay. Burning Man. Drones. Psychedelic medicine. Bike Order Warriors.
That's the name of our bicycling / camping expeditions that we do every so often. And pretty much once a month, I think we've done...
Well, sometimes we do two in 1 month
and
eight
or nine
zero in
this
one
year. So, yeah. We started late, but... Bike Order Warriors, that's our code name and that's our team name. And not only is that who we are... but that's what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
And we bike and camp.
We bike and camp.
And we kick ass.
It's totally awesome. We strap our camping stuff to our bikes, and we ride up cool mountains, usually medicated.
Ride, yeah, you push.
Ride.
We push. Push. And many a times we have to get off our bikes and push them up like dusty cliffs. Mm-hmm. That's like not uncommon. And they're like pretty heavy with all the camping stuff and food on them.
And we have lily white hands, so we're really pissed off.
Oh my gosh! After 30 miles of uphill, yeah, you know. Yeah. So it's totally hard and totally awesome, and we have invited several people, and no one yet has actually come out. But Tom has come out.
People have met us at the destination.
Rebecca met us out, and Tom met us
Adam.
Out. Adam did too.
I drove so far through like all these fucking hills and shit and like windy turns and it was a long journey.
It was in Oakland.
It was a long journey through the Oakland hills.
But it was in the same city that you were in though.
It was the kind of I guess, but I'm on way another extreme of the city. And it was down into like north of San Leandro or something, isn't it?
It was not. It was in the same
Lake
city
Chabot.
You live in. Yeah.
Lake Chabot.
Oakland, Lake Chabot.
It was far. It took me like 45.
I think I'm good.
It took me like 45 minutes to get there. I think I might have took the scenic route-ish. But it felt
how long
like
did it take us,
like
Aubrey, to get there? Like
2.5 hours?
5 hours? How long was it?
2.5 hours.
Oh. It took me like 45 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So the Bike Order Warriors is pretty fun. And about how many total miles do we have on our counter in the G Drive?
I could look it up, but it's something like...
Can you?
But to... just you and I on those trips, it's only something like 400 miles.
Really?
Yeah. But we bike every day. That's why your odometer says 1779, you know?
Yeah. I'm just under, I think I'm just under 1800 for the year. So, my personal goal was to do 2,000 miles in 2015.
Yeah, cool. What gave you that idea?
I think our conversations about like what we wanted to do and what sounded cool and cool goals was like a cool tool to use energy in a directional way, just building an idea that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially I just imagined what sounds amazingly super fun, impossibly cool.
Right, what's the best way
what's the
best way to put miles under your belt?
Yeah.
Would be to go on long trips.
Yeah, absolutely. And then how about we make it so that we could camp, we could carry our own camping gear, and then we could, at the last store on the way out, buy the provisions.
Right.
So we can get the food and beer that we would like at the last stop. So it's cool because we ride the like most of the distance, and then at the last stop we get to the store that has the beer and food, and we load up our shit like to the max.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the final hill, right? So we get back on the bike, and everything's heavier
most
than
weight,
everything, and it's
the
steepest
the
part
trip.
Yeah. Getting into the camp. It's always the campgrounds are always steep.
Yeah.
So then you have the heaviest
that,
part
that
at the
campground
end.
Was
there.
Probably the hilliest part.
But then you get up, you at the fucking
journey.
Top, and then you
but
relax.
But the whole
right?
thing, the whole thing was hilly, but it got really hilly at the campsite.
Oh, see, that's
holy
what I'm
shit.
Talking about. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about,
Bernie.
There's a lot of. How do you spell this? Can I get a? Can I have a spelling?
Bernie Sanders,
please. Oh, Bernie Sanders.
Talk about Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders is, I think, the most truest, honest, like, soulfully convicted politician. He's, like, beyond politics for everything that I've ever thought it to be.
I think this is a guy that really embodies what we want for our fellow human beings within the measure of a nation. I guess an individual nation is probably the fault that I find with Bernie Sanders is, you know, he's not really in a position to be a globalist, right?
No.
But I do think that his foreign policy embodies a global responsibility.
What do you think about Trump's thing? What do you think about Trump?
Trump is a fucking joke.
What's his unicorn? What's he about?
The joke is almost that a lot of people really think he's the guy.
Why?
But everybody else is like, how can you follow this clown into a state of true responsibility that's required? Mm. Like, he's just a flagrant bigot and
bully,
like self-righteous fucking maniac.
There's a few good points that he has.
He does have a few good points.
He's not a corporate fucking shill. Other than the corporation,
Bernie Sanders also agrees that
there are no lobbyists.
People
want to
draw comparisons between Bernie Sanders and Trump, but I think they're kind of opposites. I think they are kind of opposites. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders has been operating within the United States government for a long time and knows exactly how it works.
The thing is, he is a big part of it. The entire fucking show, all of it. There's no way
he's one guy, but he's brought forth a lot of great dialogue, and he's been in a position where, you know, he's outnumbered, obviously. You know? Yeah. By weak Democrats and fucking obstructionist Republicans.
It's just bureaucracy is blah. Why are we under this? Why is this how we live?
Two parties, why?
Why are we under, like, why does this exist? It clearly.
I think that in a way, Bernie Sanders
is leading us in a good direction.
Bernie Sanders is almost a third party candidate that we can make our Democratic representative for the next presidential race.
But I don't even agree that the
and what he it, can it exists he, anymore. He I think he knows what he can do as president, and he's gonna do it. He says he's like, I'm gonna do this shit if you elect me.
I don't think.
But I mean, so many other people say that. But I think that he actually has the balls.
Maybe.
I don't think anything's going to get by him that fucking
shits on America. You don't think Hillary Clinton's just going to win and be the status quo? You don't think that's going to happen?
I really, really don't want that to happen.
You don't think that's going to happen? Do you think it would happen? Status quo, nice and easy, big and lots of money, rich, hello, hi.
I'm actually feeling the burn.
Lots of people feeling the burn, man.
I'm feeling the burn.
But if Bernie's right, if Bernie's elected, he can't do it alone. He's right.
He's right.
He is right. He can't do it alone, and that
who's
he can't.
His,
it's true.
But I think he will continue to champion actually the intrinsic, the original design of this country and the Constitution and voting, and you know all of that stuff has an ability to be charged, you know, and totally controlled by the population, you know, all of the people. Like, there is that there, but a lot of people don't take part in it, man.
I think that the socioeconomic system itself and the free market capitalist democratic system, it no longer exists. I think it died.
Doesn't exist in an ideal
a few
form.
Years ago, and then what is in the embers of the phoenix
is, it Obama?
Is something I don't know about that, but I think that people are losing faith in the religion of money. I think money is the most powerful and most dangerous religion on the planet. And I think that people are starting to lose faith in that religion. And I think that that's a healthy choice to consider, losing faith in the religion of money. Like, people are so addicted to what money brings us, we interact 90% of our time in how do we get it, how do we spend it, what do we have, what do we don't have. That so much of our consciousness is spent up thinking about money, about do we have it, do we have enough, should we get it, am I getting it, will I need it. Like,
I'm in a position where I don't even care, like, just, I don't even care what I have necessarily, but the do I have enough is always a thing.
Yeah, one of those hits.
Yeah.
Do you have enough? And that's like, takes up time in your consciousness.
Yeah.
And that's like what, in a sense, kind of what religions do. And I think that we can move beyond that. And I think a version of what that could be is a resource-based economy.
And I think I like this idea.
Yeah. Do you know what it is?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's isn't Jacques Fresco?
He's a part of it. Yeah.
Didn't he design it? Was he the designer?
Well, the resource-based economy is basically designed by Jacques Fresco, but Jacques Fresco also stands on the shoulders of giants like Buckminster Fuller.
Oh.
So it's a lineage, and there's Jacques Fresco and Peter Joseph are major players in the design or the discussion of resource-based economy and a transition thereof.
Yeah, I am really intrigued as to how that transition could be achieved within the current structural dynamic of individual nations.
I think it's already occurring.
Resources and all of that stuff.
I think it's already occurring, and it's just going slowly. I think it's going sort of hiddenly, but it's already occurring. And I think that,
is that
it's
true?
Occurring in Time Bank is like a kind of a small example.
Time Bank,
yeah. It's like a way where people connect online to share specialized tasks.
It's like a website? Yeah. Time Bank?
Yeah, you can go like, you list what you can do, you go on there, you make a profile, you say, I can help you do this, I can animate right, that.
I can barter this service for that service.
And then what you do is you build up like hours with the community, and that's a way for just random people, like in a Craigslist sort of way, to help, like say, oh, I need a plumber's help, oh, I need a dentist's help, or I need a photography, or I need a concrete or a painter or whatever.
Right.
Everyone's hours are equal for every service. There's no hierarchy of service hour.
I'll trade you an hour of setting your gear up for a podcast for something.
Yeah, absolutely. For a plumber or garden building or whatever. So many people want to build your gardens. Geesh, if you go on Time Bank, including mine,
there's
is
no
like, I'll
I
help
want
you
to build like my own garden.
Dude, check out this garden.
The first psychedelic I did was LSD.
How much did you take?
I took like it was a gel tab.
One hit?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
That's enough to put
it
you
was,
over.
It was very, very interesting. If I do recall, I was at school. If I recall correctly.
High school?
High school.
Huh. Oh, my God.
You went to class?
I was in 10th grade.
Holy shit.
How the fuck did that go?
10th grade?
I was in second hour. It was like 8:30, 9 o'clock. It was probably like 9:10 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Maybe 8:45 or something.
Dude,
I don't know.
How'd that go?
I can't imagine that. What the fuck was that like?
But dude, that set and setting,
it,
that
especially
is
especially in high school.
That sounds awful.
Not
to me,
in,
that
not
would
in
be
high
awful.
School, but while I was in high school, I took a lot.
Yeah, God, like 10th grade.
I think I tripped. I tripped in school like 3 or 4 times.
Here I am tripping balls all these people I've known for like
trying to
10
do
years.
Like
suddenly
math,
it seems
math
so
class.
Much more absurd than I thought.
I was just
they
laughing.
Were.
I was like, this is fucking impossible. Like, fortunately. We like partnered up in math school, in math class. Everybody loves math.
Math. I
is
love
a, math. Is one of the sacred the geometry fucking keys
math.
Of knowledge.
Aubrey loves math.
scientists have like discovered that there are parallel universes that are like interacting with their own, that have like even like a different subset of laws,
right,
that govern them. Like their sacred geometry would be different from ours, you know. Right. There might not even be like fucking numbers or something, you know. I don't know.
Yeah,
it could be like all like gradients and
thoughts.
Shit.
Thoughts,
gradients,
gestures, gradients. And thoughts.
Did you say gradient?
Gradient.
Huh. Yeah. That's a cool name. I like that word.
That's a cool topic. That's a good topic.
Gradient. Do you know what that is?
I think most things.
I do. It's like a blending and emerging between points.
I believe that most things in the human universe are continuums, which is to say gradients, and also paradoxes. That may be true. Thanks again to Final Corp. Again, 50 different flavors of mayonnaise with over 50 years of experience. This is amazing. I'm tongue-tied talking about the product. Look, they have dill mayonnaise. They have poison ivy mayonnaise.
I love dill.
They have poison oak mayonnaise.
They have barrel-aged imperial mayonnaise.
Barrel-aged imperial mayonnaise. They have mayonnaise.
Don't forget.
Filet mayonnaise.
Multi-aise. Can we spend a moment talking about multi-aise? My favorite instrument /
Can I get a mayonnaise lubricant?
All right. Yeah, absolutely. This is multi-aise. That's what I'm talking about. Multi-aise.
This is a little weird because this is not in the ad copy that Final Corp sent us, but please... Go ahead.
Listen here, Tom. Rusty gears. Oh, absolutely.
Multi-A's.
Here's the thing. Multi-A's is this multi-A thing, and I might need some help describing the whole thing. But multi-A's is this. It's a sandwich spread.
It
cleans your bathroom tubs. You can use it to fill caulking around corners where water might be. It can lubricate your engine. It can flavor your chips. Mm-hmm. You can use it as a shampoo. You can wash your dog with it. It will fertilize your soil. And you can also use it as glue in any instances.
I have two words.
Yeah, what's that?
Anal douche?
Yeah, absolutely. That's anal one douche. Of the... Enema. There's many pages of what multi-A's does. But basically,
Multi-A's enema.
You think about it. Never multi-A's does it. And you spread it on a sandwich, and you will like it. It'll increase the flavor. But it will also seal the roof, you know.
That's right. Multi-A's has the unique property of having the property that you want it to. So whatever you use it for, it becomes the ultimate thing to use for that particular thing.
Multi-A's.
It's the best product. It's the final... I mean, can I forget seal, about...
Can I seal the roof?
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Let's say I just had a really bad fight with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Right?
And She's already your ex-wife?
I have multiple knife wounds.
Multiple knife wounds.
And I'm looking to cauterize the wounds and seal them.
Please squirt multi-A's into all of them as fast as you can. Yes. Absolutely.
Forget about Neosporin. Forget about any other antibiotic cream.
We could sell it to you in like a bucket style, like a 5-gallon bucket, or you can get it in like a toothpaste squirter or many sizes
smear
in between.
It on. Yeah. Just smear it on. That's the motto. The motto is just smear it on.
Yeah.
Just smear it on.
I love that. It solves all your problems. I love that because it's multi.
Whatever your problem is, just smear it on.
It's such a release. It's like finally I can just relax.
And people are having their to go packs with multi-A's, and it's kind of like a Camelback of multi-A's. That you can just kind of suckle on as a nutritive source, you can squeeze it out onto a knife and spread it onto your problems.
Right. How did it, how did it take us this long to figure this out? This is what people want. Finally. Mayonnaise in a tube.
To go.
That you, to go.
And in
to
speaking go. Of mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise in a tube.
Do you guys know about Naze? Oh my God, Naze! When I'm on the skate park,
Naze is crazy.
I want to drink Naze. Final carbon, I'm responsible.
Right? Naze is the fuel that satisfies all my desires.
Naze. Now,
how long have you been skateboarding?
Every year.
That's right. Naze helps skateboarding, helps extreme sports.
Naze. Carbonated mayonnaise, fruit flavored beverages.
I want so many trophies on Naze.
Strawberry, cranberry,
banana,
boysenberry,
kale.
I've won so many trophies on Naze. It's incredible.
Cheese, haircut, underpants. Baby diaper flavored
Naze.
Carbonated beverage.
Splash in your mouth. Naze.
Final Corp. Thanks again to Final Corp for
funding this whole project.
Yeah, for funding this whole project, letting us get away with this stuff.
Everything happens when it's final.
It'll be fine.
Finally, a corporation.
It'll be fine.